540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. The death toll due to Maui wildfires climbs to 110. Hawaii Governor Josh Green.
We're just a little bit more heartbroken because we do have to report that more of our loved ones have been confirmed lost.
Hundreds are still unaccounted for. CBS's Jonathan Vigliotti in Lahaina.
With the death toll mounting, the road to recovery is long and painful.
It's haunting to live. I feel the sorrow in the way that they passed.
The massive fire that tore through Lahaina last Tuesday at a mile a minute stopped right at Kalani Ross's property line. Everything south of her home was torched.
What separated you from this fate?
I don't know.
She evacuated before the worst of the firestorm hit.
President Biden and the First Lady will visit Maui on Monday. The Fulton County DA, who will be prosecuting former President Trump in a Georgia indictment, proposes a trial date. CBS's Nicole Killian.
Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis has proposed a March 4th trial date next year in her case against former President Donald Trump and 18 co-defendants. They were indicted this week on racketeering charges and accused of conspiring to overturn the results of the 2020 election. The DA says arraignments for the group should start the week of September 5th. Trump and his co-defendants have until the end of next week to surrender themselves to local authorities. Nicole Killian, CBS News, Atlanta.
Lawyers for families of the 10 black people killed in last year's mass shooting at a Buffalo, New York supermarket by a white supremacist announced two new lawsuits. Wayne Jones lost his mother.
The lawsuit is to stop the next family from feeling like we're feeling.
One lawsuit accuses social media companies of playing a role in radicalizing the shooter. The second targets the makers and sellers of the guns and body armor used. The U.S. women's national team is looking for a new head coach. CBS's Monica Ricks.
The U.S. had a tough run at the Women's World Cup, losing to Sweden in the round of 16, the team's earliest exit from the tournament ever.
Yeah, he showed everything that we could to win the game. And unfortunately, soccer can be cruel sometimes.
Coach Vladko Andonovski resigned after the loss. He's the first to coach the U.S. in two major tournaments without winning a title.
After 3 months of walking the picket line, striking Hollywood writers express optimism about the reopening of contract talks with major studios. Actor Noah Wiley picketed outside Netflix in L.A.
I'm sort of conditioning myself against having too much hope, trying to make myself feel girded for however long it's going to take. But I like that the fact that they're talking.
Details of the latest proposal from the major studios and streamers is shrouded in secrecy. This is CBS News.
Hire with minimal effort and max speed with Indeed. Their hiring solution platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates efficiently. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles. It might look like a good day to get out on a Lake Michigan beach, but that might not be the case.
A beach hazard statement is in effect through late tonight for the beaches along Lake Michigan. High waves climbing up to 6 feet and strong currents are expected as winds gust up to 40 miles per hour. This will result in a dangerous swim risk, especially at beaches in Sheboygan and Ozaukee counties, with a moderate risk further south. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot, Civic Media News.
A father and daughter from Romania are facing charges for alleged theft from multiple Kohl's stores in Waukesha County. Danut and Gabriella Constantin are accused of concealing items in gift bags and not paying for them, resulting in thefts totaling almost $7,000. The pair is believed to be part of an organized crime group. They were arrested in connection with thefts in Muskego, Brookfield, and Delafield. With news on WAUK The Shaw, I'm Stuart J. Waddles.
You've heard the word a lot lately, but what does it mean to be arraigned? The Department of Justice describes it as the first court appearance for someone facing criminal charges. A judge reads those charges, then the accused enters a plea. At the end of an arraignment, a trial date is set, along with bond. And depending on the severity of the charges, the judge can add conditions to take away the defendant's weapons or passport before being released. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr.
Up US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting. a teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
I have Corrine Hendrickson, part of the Wisconsin Early Childhood Action Needed group.
The Joint Finance Committee, again in the middle of the night, took that out and said, well, hey, you have all this money coming from the federal government. Why don't you use that to create this program? Well, guess what? We proved it worked. Wages went up $2 an hour. There actually are a couple extra childcare businesses open now than there were about a year ago. And that's going to stop. Just Monday, we lost two.
Weekday morning, 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Civic Media radio stations providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
Right wingers out there who are so-called originalists, textualists, are delighted about the decision since it honors the words of the Montana Constitution. You're welcome. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. President gave a presentation today. Talking about the Inflation Reduction Act, the jobs, and I love the fact that he says, when I think climate, I think jobs. That's the reality. It's something I've been saying for a very long time. The new economy, climate, jobs. That's the reality of the place we're in. And look, the president talked about a lot of the successes of the IRA and the fact that we're doing a bunch of really positive stuff. The weird thing is, and this is one of the things that's, again, we have a right-wing media that is extraordinarily powerful, pointing out all of the things that are wrong, all of the things. You have no idea how many people today emailed me and said, well, you know, Rick, inflation still a problem. People are going homeless. Suicide rates are higher. You know, homelessness is higher. You know, all this bad stuff's higher. And I'm going, yeah, it is. I agree. How do we fix it? How do we do it? And again, these are my conservative listeners who are saying, look, there are all these problems. No solutions. And this is the frustration of this moment, because look, I think the president is moving us in a very positive direction. I think we're heading in the right direction. We're reshoring manufacturing. We're bringing back strategic industrial policies that we haven't had in a very long time. And as he tweeted out today, he said Bidenomics is a stark contrast with trickle-down economics, which says it doesn't matter where companies make things as long as it helps their bottom line. For me, that the fact that the president knows that, the fact that during his speech he said, look, a lot of this investment is going into those places that we went to back in October and November, a lot of the places that have been forgotten, that are struggling, where, yes, opioid addiction is a serious problem, where, yes, families have been broken because of corporate America seeking out the cheapest, most exploitable labor, and, oh, by the way, mass subsidies from foreign governments. The fact that he gets that and is moving us in a different direction is an incredibly large ray of hope for me. we are turning the page on neoliberalism. We're turning the page on, and it's not going to happen overnight. This is where I keep coming back to. Yeah, all of these problems exist, which is why he's not getting the credit that he probably should be getting for making this move, because people are still struggling. Grocery prices are still high. Gas prices are too high. Wages aren't high enough, aren't rising fast enough. Yeah, those are all realities of the world that we're in. The question then comes, how do we fix that? And where the politics in this comes to play, because again, I go back to eighth grade and my government teacher, government decides who gets what. Now you have one party who says government should do nothing. We should leave it up to chance. We should leave it up to the invisible hand. We should leave it up to mythical forces, whatever. However you want to frame that, we should leave it up to nobody. And you've got what Biden is doing and what worked in the, you know, the 40s, 50s, 60s, an industrial plan. When government invests in things and says, hey, we're going in a direction, you see an increase in jobs and employment. You see an increase in wages. You see when policy moves in the right direction, lives get better. What got us to the point where we're at right now is we're in this weird moment where we're fighting to get away from all of the invisible thinking. Well, the free market will take care of it. Well, the free market does one thing efficiently. It creates profit because it kills wages, kills benefits. It chews people up and spits them out. And look, the frustration and the anger is real. And this is what, you know, I have people who say, well, you're a Biden cheerleader, when he's right. And when I think he's doing the right thing. Now, remember, you go back to the Trump years. When I thought he did something right, I gave him credit for it. The tariffs on China, yeah. Talking about the fact that China's eating our lunch, absolutely. Wanting to bring jobs back in manufacturing, without question. But what I find really interesting is that my friends on the right cannot do the same, can't reciprocate, because Biden is doing all the things that Trump talked about, only has a plan, has a way forward, and things are moving in the right direction, I think. Now, I find it very interesting that on the anniversary of the Inflation Reduction Act, you've got someone like Joe Manchin coming out and saying, you know, he's going to fight the radical climate agenda. And, you know, and that's interesting considering, you know, what's happening in Hawaii right now. It's interesting when you start looking at some of the other things that are going on to still have your head kind of in the sand on this issue. But it's also really interesting because there are manufacturing plants being built in West Virginia that are doing wind turbines and solar panels and doing things that are going to employ people in his state. Find it interesting. And this is where I come back to politics matters. We are on what I think is the right path. Is everything perfect? No. Biden didn't have the opportunity. Someone emailed me today and said, you know, we gave Democrats all the power for 2 years. And, you know, did they pass a minimum wage increase? Did they do all these things? And I'm going, you gave them what power? You do understand that the Senate is where all good ideas go to die, that the House did pass all of the things that you wanted. All of the things that this person who emailed me laid out, you know, healthcare, education funding, you know, minimum wage, all of this stuff, you know, just top to bottom, the Democratic House passed. It went to the Senate to die. The Inflation Reduction Act was much chunkier, was much bigger, was what I was saying we needed. We need healthy investment. But we got the little that we got because of compromise. Because you had to deal with Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema and the like. So this idea, and this is where the simplistic bothers me. Well, the Democrats were in charge of everything. Yeah, but they didn't have 60 votes in the Senate. And again, I go back to, that's where good ideas go to die. It's where progress goes to die. That's where the stuff for you and me, for working people, That's where it goes to die. Now, would Biden have loved to have had a much bigger... Absolutely. Would have loved to have had a much bigger impact on climate. Would have loved to have had much more access to infrastructure spending. Would have loved to have done more of that stuff. But we got what we got. And I'll tell you, you know, it's remarkable what he was able to accomplish. But I come back to all of the attacks on him. I think are mostly unfounded. Yeah, I understand. Rent prices are through the roof. How is that Biden's fault? Did we all of a sudden nationalize all of the rental units? Grocery food prices are up. Grocery prices are up. Did we nationalize the grocery stores? And he talked about this today in his little talk on the anniversary of the Inflation Reduction Act, that corporate profits are coming down, which is why things are stabilizing. Why inflation is really coming down is corporate profits are coming back into line. And as I was saying all during the last couple of years, the pain and the suffering that we as consumers are struggling under is because we've got to feed the mighty investor class. We've got to feed the profit monster. And they were honest about it. If you listened to their earnings calls, they were quite honest. They were raising prices, not because they had to, not because their cost had gone up, not because labor costs were through the roof or any of that. They were raising it. Why? Because they could. There was a good opportunity to cash in. And of course, you know, blame Biden, blame the pandemic, blame everybody, but their greed. And you go, but Rick, you know, corporate America's always been greedy. Yeah, I understand that. Which is why when you have policies in place to tax the you-know-what out of them, maybe that doesn't happen. But we couldn't get that, couldn't do that. So for me, I look at where we are with a moment of hope, but also understanding people are struggling. The pain, the suffering, the anger, it's real. And you can't deny it. You've got to embrace it. You've got to grab a hold of it. And you've got to move forward with it. And address it. And the person who addresses it, that's who's going to win elections. And I think that's what Biden's trying to do. I want to hear your thoughts, though. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So earlier today, I happened to see Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck threw a hissy fit. Evidently, his podcast was taken off of Apple iTunes. And understand, Apple and iTunes, that is the podcast host. You know, if you're off that, you're nowhere. So immediately it was, and you knew this is what it was going to be. Immediately it was, you know, I'm the victim. They're silencing me. They're coming for me. It's the government who's silencing me. And look, no one plays a victim like a conservative. Nobody. Nobody does the poor, pitiful me. No one. Now, understand, these are the very people who tell us, you know, private interest, private business can do whatever they want in denying those people cakes or websites. But when private business says, no, I think you're crazy, I don't think we want you on our platform, then it becomes, it's the government coming for us. Because private decisions then aren't really private. And when I saw this, I'm going, look, as someone who posts our podcast on Apple, there have been times throughout the years where I've gotten a, hey, there's something wrong. Jump through these hoops. You know, there's all this stuff that, you know, potentially is there. And so my mind goes, you know, I really suck at playing the victim, because every time that happens, or the one time that I forgot to pay the $99 for the year to be able to post. And I thought that's probably what he did. Probably thought he didn't have to pay the $99. And they said, we want our money, because it's all about money. But I thought about this and I go, man, I don't play the victim well. I could have easily come up, they're silencing me. And he got a lot of play with this. The right wing's losing their minds. And, you know, I had this whole thought of, you know, maybe Apple is, maybe iTunes, maybe they're trying to clean up their mess. Because I found it interesting. He tweeted something out the other day that caught my attention. He says, I'm seeing the government do things I've never seen in my 40 plus years of broadcasting. People have been mailed credible threats to presidents for years. They've rightly been investigated for it, but I've never seen the FBI gun anyone down for it ever. This is not normal. You know, it's not normal barricading yourself in the house and pointing your gun at an FBI agent. That's not normal. But what got my attention is, you know, maybe, and this is where I was going, possibly, who knows? Maybe iTunes is going, you know what? We want people not on our platform who promote this kind of this anger, who ramp people up into these rages to where they're ready to take out a gun and go do who knows what. And, you know, because, so there was a moment of hope that I'm going, no, maybe there's a good reason. And it was just a normal glitch. But he got his name out there. And I got to give him credit. He sure knows how to play. Let's go to the phones. Got Alice on one. Alice, how are you?
Totally insane. So I read an article that a friend of mine shared on Facebook that basically she had shared it saying, this is what these people believe. And the article was written by a Christian evangelical pastor who also does, he's a therapist, a Christian therapist.
None of this is telling me we're going in a good direction.
Yeah. So it started out, he was saying that he believed that borderline personality disorder is not a mental illness, but the person has been possessed by the demon of Jezebel.
Yeah, here we go again.
And that they basically needed to be delivered with prayer and whatnot by the church. And then he went on saying how the liberals in the Democratic Party are all possessed by demons and are mentally ill. And I thought, really? Y'all are the crazy ones if you think that people that have borderline personality disorder are possessed by demons. And now you're saying the entire Democratic Party is possessed by demons. And then it led again then into what they were doing to the Christians and the right wing and on and on. And I was just amazed that this guy wasn't put in a mental hospital somewhere.
Like I said, nobody plays the victim like a conservative.
Oh, especially if they're an evangelical one.
Yeah, I'm
they're even worse.
Yeah, nothing surprising.
But have a good evening, Rick.
Thanks, Alice. Appreciate it. No, am I surprised by this? No, not even a little bit. And this is, you know, this is the moment where the sane and the rational have to say enough is enough. You know, we played that clip of the pastor, you know, last week, and you go, what is it about people that would sit and listen to the kind of stuff that this guy was spewing? It's quite remarkable. Let's go to the phones. We got Steve in Chicago on line one. Steve, how are you?
Fine, thank you. So hang on for 1 second. I'm just getting in the car, and I'm beeping away here. But I wanted to make the point that for a lot of people out there who want to fall back on the notion that they have some sort of credentials, and this is what this caller was referring to, is a classic example in which somebody is abusing the credentials that they may or may not have in order to promote an ideology which is in no way supported by the people in their own field. So be careful. If somebody tells you, you know, if somebody with a biology degree tells you that evolution is in question and it's not anything that's definitively been demonstrated to be scientifically based truth, then you need to start asking yourself about what their motives might be. The same thing with regard to the germ theory of disease. And certainly with regard to what she was alluding to in terms of diagnosing people as being possessed by any sort of supernatural power. I'm sorry, you can look it up in the DSM, people. That's the Bible of what psychiatry and psychology use to diagnose how we think and those things that are dysfunctional about us and diseased and so forth in terms of our minds. There is nothing in there that attributes any of that to anything supernatural. So if somebody tells you that they have a degree and then goes on to spout something like that, it means that they are lying to you, that the people in their own field do not support this position. And so by all means, challenge that view.
Yeah. So, but don't you think in this moment, Steve,
people, as I said,
if I could cut you off for a second, don't you think, though, that, you know, especially on the right and some on the left, that there are personalities that they want to know something that nobody else does. They want to be special. And that this whatever twisted view, you know, whether you're selling, you know, silver to stop COVID or, you know, whatever scheme you come up with, it's about you being special and everybody else being wrong. That you're the authority, you're the only one. And do you see that as part of this as well?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there a couple of psychologists came up with this theory called the Dunning-Kruger effect. Basically, the dumbest people in the world are absolutely the most certain that they are absolutely correct about everything. And what you find among people who are actually better educated and more intelligent is that they're constantly questioning the things that they feel are true. Yeah. And that they're reasonably certain about, because they know that there is no absolute truth. I hold 3 degrees, including a doctorate, and I have answered for every question I've answered. I have 10 more that I can't answer. And yet I will meet people constantly who will tell me that, you know, that you, all that's a lot of nonsense. Life's really simple. You don't need to read all those books or study all these things. And, you know, I can pretty much tell you exactly how the world works over a couple of beers in a bar. I mean, you know, this is the ridiculous idea that people get into their heads. And you're absolutely right that some people just feel a need to validate their existence. And they're like a Donald Trump. He is the living embodiment of that. He honestly believes that he knows more than everyone at the State Department, than everybody at the Pentagon, at the National Institutes of Health. You name it, Donald Trump knows more than they do. And most of the time, it's sort of laughable. But when somebody has power and they have this view of the world, it becomes very dangerous.
Yep. No, in fact, I was just having this conversation with my son, you know, because, you know, he's just a teenager. And I said, you know, when I was your age, I knew everything. You could ask me. I'd have known it. I knew it all. And the older I got, the dumber I got, the more I realized I don't really know anything.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I always find it interesting because every year there are a bunch of college kids who come home after a semester of having studied political science, sociology, psychology. They've read their first textbook and they come home and start to analyze their parents and start to tell us exactly why the world works the way that it does, because they've got the answer. Yeah, you've got the answer until the next semester when you're going to have read another set of books that will give you a different set of answers. And then next year you'll have another one. You know, that's the nature of knowledge. Knowledge is complex and the world is complex. And nobody has got all the answers.
Yep. You're spot on. Steve, I appreciate the thoughts, man. Good stuff.
Thank you.
No, look, he's spot on. And I know probably 100 people like this, which is why on the right, you know, that you'll hear, you know, I look at the Prager stuff, which is, you know, simplistic. Which is, you know, being a very, very pointed in a direction, very narrow. And again, back to very simplistic. Feeding the narrative that they want, the rewriting of history, if you will. Because you can't make things complex. And where I keep saying, look, I had someone say, well, do you want your kids to see the Prager University stuff? I go, yeah, I actually, I showed my son the Prager kid stuff. And we had a conversation about what's wrong with it. We had a conversation of how crazy it is. It was him bringing that up. I think you have to expose this kind of stuff and in an environment where you can have actual people who know what's going on. And that's why the assault on education, what's going on, is so important. But I appreciate the calls. I got to take a quick break. When I come back, Doug Jones is going to be here, former Alabama senator, to share some thoughts on the anniversary of the Inflation Reduction Act. Also, the Trump thing. You may have heard, the fourth indictment. He's hit for the cycle. Quick break. Right back.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 2012. That was the day a release of flammable vapor led to a fire at the Chevron refinery in Richmond, California. A level 3 community warning system alert was issued for the cities of Richmond, San Paulo, and North Richmond. Toxic black smoke could be seen for miles while the fire burned for hours. 19 workers were nearly incinerated trying to escape the fire. More than 15,000 area residents sought medical treatment for chest pains, breathing problems, headaches, and sore throats. The Chemical Safety Board found that the release was caused by a leaking pipe that eventually ruptured. The pipe, made of carbon steel, suffered sulfidic corrosion. The Chemical Safety Board noted that for 40 years, the refinery industry had known that carbon steel corrodes at a much faster rate than higher chromium content steel pipe. The pipe in question had no shutoff valve to isolate the leak. In its final report, the Chemical Safety Board issued a number of findings. They found that Chevron knew of the corrosion but did nothing to prevent it. As well, Chevron not only failed to perform 100% component inspections, but it also rejected earlier recommendations to inspect and replace the pipe that would eventually fail. When it came to emergency response, Chevron failed to identify and communicate process controls or damage mechanisms in the incident command structure. They also had no leak response guidance or formal protocol to determine how to handle a process leak. The Chemical Safety Board found the safety culture lacking. Workers were reluctant to use their stop work authority and were often encouraged to continue operations despite hazardous conditions. The Chemical Safety Board issued a number of recommendations, including more stringent regulatory enforcement. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Ohio voters scored a big election victory for women's rights last week. It was a tricky vote, too. Deceptively couched as a statewide referendum to approve a little technical change in the procedure for approving statewide referendums. How boring. But Ohioans figured out that it really was a big vote on an underhanded ploy by right-wing Republicans to block the right of women to make their own reproductive decisions. Not boring. So, in a huge turnout, a whopping 57% of voters said yes to women and no to the tricksters. Yet the referendum actually did encompass a procedural issue that's an even bigger political story than the election results, namely, the GOP's ongoing attempts to rig election rules so its extremist minority can, quote, win without getting a majority of the votes. Background. A state constitutional amendment guaranteeing the right to abortion is already set to be voted on this November in Ohio. Right-wing Republican leaders, though, fear that more than half of Ohioans will support that amendment. Thus, last week's referendum was their desperate attempt to win by losing, specifically by decreeing that, hocus-pocus, constitutional initiatives must get 60% approval to become law. Yes, a 40% minority of voters could nullify the majority will of the people. This is Jim Hightower saying this gaming of the system by devious Republican officials and far-right extremists has become their core political strategy across the country. It's actually a deeply embarrassing admission by them. They are conceding that they are now captives of ideological extremism and outright nutballism, making their party so completely out of touch with the American majority that they can't win honestly. So they've become the anti-democracy party, acting as rabid political veterinarians out to fix democracy by neutering the power of the people.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, a new AP NORC poll out. They say 35% of Americans have a favorable view of Donald Trump, and that makes sense. You've got the ardent base. You've got the ones who, doesn't matter, he could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue, and they'd still vote for him. 62% unfavorable. Now, you look at the Republicans, 7 and 10 view Trump as favorable. 6 and 10 say they want him to run again. So the Republicans have a real problem because those numbers, that doesn't bode well for a November election. But it does mean he's probably going to be their nominee, even if he's locked up. And here to share some thoughts on the most recent indictment, the hat trick. Not just the hat trick. He's now hit for the cycle. He's got all four indictments. And look, he wanted them. He got his fourth indictment, and here to share some thoughts on that, I've asked former Alabama Senator Doug Jones to come share some thoughts. Doug, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, it is always good to be with you. Good to see you tonight.
So what do you make of the fourth one? And a lot of people are saying this is the important one. What do you make of this fourth indictment?
Well, you know, look, first of all, I think all of these are important, and we should not lessen any one of them, to be honest with you. And the one thing that I really want to stress to folks is that I read these indictments, particularly read this Georgia indictment. I know it's long, 98 pages, and the special counsel indictment involving January 6th, which is about 45 pages. Please take the time to read those, Rick. I mean, it's easy to listen to the media and try to explain it. But when you read that, I will tell you, when you read those, they complement each other. Incredible. It's amazing how they fit and all the pieces of the puzzle seem to fit together, much like what we saw in the January 6th committee. It is breathtaking in its depth. And the other thing is people read this indictment and they see the allegations. The thing I want people to remember is that the factual statements that they're making, they don't have to, especially these, what they call overt acts. Overt acts don't have to be criminal conduct. They can be perfectly legal conduct standing on their own, but taken as a whole to commit an illegal means or an illegal object of a conspiracy, then that is what is known as an overt act. And all of this evidence appears to come from unindicted co-conspirators or Republican associates of Donald Trump, people that worked for him, people that were in the campaign, or Republicans like the Speaker of the House of Representatives in Arizona, the Georgia governor, the Georgia Secretary of State. This is not the deep state leftist socialist wokeism that is providing this evidence. These are the people that were surrounded, that Donald Trump surrounded himself with. And there are his text messages and there is his emails. And so I really, it's an interesting place we are in this history where we have four indictments, but we've got a long way to go. And I think everybody should recognize that Donald Trump, just like everybody else that's been charged with a crime, is innocent until proven guilty. But the fact is that forget whether or not it proves a crime. The facts alone, Rick, are pretty stunning. And I don't always agree with Mike Pence on everything, but I agree with him on this. Those facts alone should disqualify Donald Trump from being president of the United States.
And it's not just Pence saying it. The Federalist Society had a couple people coming out saying it. There have been a bunch of groups. But, you know, you talked about the people who are, you know, the rats who have jumped ship, so to speak. Those are the very best people, if you remember, because Trump only surrounds himself with the very best people. So it's interesting watching how the right is attacking the very best people for just coming out and telling what happened.
Yeah, they're telling what happened, and they appear to be consistent. If you look across the two indictments and compare that, people are forgetting all of the evidence, much of which we've seen before in the January 6th. It's all very consistent. Now, candidly, this evidence has not been tested by really good defense lawyers yet. That is going to happen. But they're really consistent on what was said and done and the factual chronology about what happened leading up to the election, just after the election, and just prior to and post January 6th. I think the thing that's newest about the Georgia indictment are the allegations concerning the Coffee County efforts to literally break into the voting machines. You know, Rick, I told somebody the other day, I said, well, gosh, if you read all of this about what they were trying to do with this election, maybe all of those people on the ellipse on January 6th were yelling, you know, so they were yelling, stop the steal. Maybe they weren't yelling to the president or with the president. They were yelling at him.
No, but this, look, you know, to that point, you know, I had said the same thing about Brian Kemp and Brad Raffensperger. I argued that they were trying to steal the election before the first ballot was ever cast because they were purging the voting rolls like crazy, hundreds of thousands of people being thrown off the voting rolls. And I was saying, look, you know, Raffensperger isn't a hero in my view, just like I don't think Mike Pence is a hero in my view. They did what their job was. They did enough to keep themselves out of jail. And
they followed their oath, okay?
Right.
And at least on this, they did what they were supposed
Absolutely.
To do. They followed their oath. You know, I told folks in my speech about when I gave us my floor speech after announcing I was going to vote to impeach Donald Trump, that so many people were saying it was an act of courage. Well, courage, you know, when you do the right thing, that shouldn't be an act of courage. It is just what you do to uphold your oath. And by the way, the Secretary of State's office in Georgia is still purging voters right now. Okay.
Yep.
That is still going on. I don't know how many, but it is alarming a lot of people in Georgia going into 2024.
Yeah. I mean, look, you know, it's one of those things that my mother always said, when somebody's pointing a finger at you, they got three pointing back at them. And I find it interesting that when someone accuses you of doing something, it's what they're doing. Especially Trump, because he's got, I don't know what it is, but if it's something has been put into his ear, it's got to come out his mouth. So this idea that, you know, all this fraud's going on, it's got to be, in my view, because it's what they're doing.
Yeah. And you know what? The other thing about the Jack Smith and the Fani Willis indictments, that they are showing consistently over and over and over, is the false statements that Trump, Giuliani, and others were making about the election being stolen, about the fraud that was there, and how that was just one perpetual lie after another. And there's a telling comment that's in both of these indictments, and it came out in the January 6th, a comment that Donald Trump made to his then Attorney General Bill Barr, when he said that, just announce that there is some irregularities and me and the Republican members of Congress will take it from there.
Yep.
The same thing that he said to Vladimir Zelensky in Ukraine about opening an investigation of Hunter Biden. Just say you've got an investigation and don't worry about it. We will take it from there. That has been clearly a pattern here. And that's the kind of thing that I wish people would, that Donald Trump supporters and others would focus on, to see that they've been being played. I mean, that is an admission that so many of these folks are being played. And, you know, Rick, I want to say this too, because I've said this before. I think I've said something similar on your show. We talk about the 35% that are supporting Donald Trump, the overwhelming number of Republicans who want to see him renominated. You know, I've got to say, having gone through a 2017 campaign against a guy who had some horrible allegations raised against him, there is an element to this that I think is often overlooked. And that is that people that have supported a public official do not want to believe that that official is crooked. They don't want to believe allegations like this that are so horrible that a public official has literally lied to them over and over and over, because it makes you feel bad. It makes you feel like a sucker. And so what I believe, and I may be wrong, as the evidence comes out, I think that there's going to be a significant turn. I don't know when that'll happen. It may not happen before the Republican nomination, but we did see it in January 6th. We saw the beginning of the cracks after the January 6th committee. And this is getting pretty serious with these allegations now. And I just, it's hard to believe that this kind of activity happened in the United States of America.
No, I'm with you. But here's the thing. As you laid that out, my mind is going into this place of the people who are his most ardent supporters, the people who will defend him. You know, he could literally shoot someone on Fifth Avenue and they wouldn't care. They're the ones who believe everyone in politics is corrupt and all of them are no good and all of them are lying, except that guy, which is the weirdest kind of thing for me.
It is. And he hooked them in and he's not going to let go. They're not going to let it go. And there will be those. And as long as we've got human beings that are voting and not artificial intelligence, you're going to have that. And you can't really explain it. You just have to try to get as many people as you can out there with the message of what we've got to do to protect this democracy. And Donald Trump is clearly, again, even if he is acquitted on every one of these charges, what he did factually. And by the way, they're talking about freedom of speech. You know, they think that's a defense, which it's really not a defense, but they're implicitly admitting that everything they said was not true. I have the freedom of speech to lie to the American people, even if it means I'm going to perpetuate a fraud on them. And so we got a long way to go, Rick. Long way to go.
Which is amazing to me. So are you looking forward to Monday when he comes out with his large, complex, detailed, irrefutable report that will be conclusive and it's going to completely exonerate him? And then they're going to go after the riggers. Are you waiting for that big report?
Yeah, you know, look, the irrefutable report that's already been refuted by Brian Kemp, the governor of Georgia, he's already said this was a fair election. So, I think it's going to be like most of the things that Trump has done when he set the stage like this. It'll be somewhat of a nothing burger.
I had someone email me and ask, you know, why Biden hasn't chimed in on this and why Biden won't talk about Trump. I responded. My response was, why would he? This is not his. He didn't do this. He's not directing this. He's got other things to do, like, I don't know, run the country.
Yeah. And the fact of the matter is, all of this is being discussed every day. It's being analyzed every day. And again, I go back to some personal experience. You didn't see me addressing all of the Roy Moore stuff in 2017. Other people were doing that. I wanted to get my message out. And I think that's what the president is doing. He's got a really strong message. And I know we're going to talk about that in a moment, probably. But that's what he needs to be focused on. The media, the indictments, the charges, he's not going to be able to control that narrative, but it's going to be out there. The information that needs to be out there about Donald Trump is going to be out there. And the thing to watch as we go forward with 18 defendants, who gets cold feet? Who starts to talk about? You've already got some unindicted co-conspirators who have immunity to testify. There will be, I believe, based on my experience, I will be shocked if you don't see somebody among these 18 that decides to cut a deal. I'll be shocked if we don't see something.
Well, I mean, happen. You've got the 18 named co-conspirators, and then there's, I guess, what, 30? Unnamed co-conspirators. I mean, basically, she indicted half of the Republican Party. and look, if you look at what's going on with Rudy Giuliani, if you're one of those 30, you've got to be looking at your checkbook going, I can't afford this. If nothing else, if your love of country and of constitution and democracy, if that doesn't call you to do the right thing, looking at your checkbook and going, no one's bailing me out paying my legal bills, that I think would have some, maybe it's just me, but I think that would have something to do with it.
Well, I think it will, but I think more than that, Rick, it is going to be the fear of a potential mandatory prison term upon conviction. And you got to remember, this is a fascinating charge, this racketeering charge. I've seen it used so many times, primarily in federal court, but it's very broad in Georgia, very broad. It encompasses a lot of different crimes that what you don't always think of in terms of racketeering. But this is so interesting because it goes from the president of the United States on down to fake electors in one state. It's really incredible. And you got to figure it, if you're on the bottom part of that totem pole there, in the bottom, very, very end there, what are you thinking? What are you thinking? You were loyal to a guy who's at the top, and all of a sudden you're under an indictment. You know, you're going to walk into and you're going to get booked. You're going to get fingerprinted. And all of a sudden you've got the state of Georgia versus X, fill in the blank. It's maybe not as daunting as United States of America versus defendant X, but it's still pretty damn daunting.
No, jail is jail. I don't want to go to either state or federal prison. But you said a second ago there are people going to jail. Do you think it's possible he could be one of them?
Well, look, you know, again, and I always qualify this, Rick. You know, my prosecutor and defense lawyer comes out at me.
Yeah, yeah.
And because the presumption of innocence is a presumption of law. I mean, it is evidence to be considered. But you know, so you can't ever predict the conviction. You don't know if he will end up testifying. I think that will be interesting to see. It's my understanding, and I haven't really read the Georgia code, but it's my understanding this may carry some mandatory prison time if he's convicted. I don't know. It is going to be very interesting to see. He cannot pardon himself.
Right.
There is, here's my prediction though. Here's what I think that people are going to need to be watchful of. In Georgia, you've got a 5-member commission that is supposed to, you know, decide whether or not somebody can be pardoned. As I understand it, you're not even eligible for a pardon until 5 years has elapsed. It's going to be interesting to see if there are moves in the Georgia legislature to change that law, to carve out some exceptions for that, to do something, to give it to the governor, to give it to somebody, to give it to the legislature, for God's sakes. I don't know, but it's going to be really interesting to see what that Georgia legislature, if they do anything with the pardon issue, the pardon laws in Georgia.
Would not be surprising. You listen to the Rick Smith Show with Doug Jones, former Alabama senator, talking about the cycle of indictments. I mean, you know, this is pretty, to use a baseball term, he's hit for the cycle. He wanted the fourth one. He got it. So it's going to be interesting. But last on this, do you think the fact that Georgia has such, you know, as you said, wide, you know, wide net of laws and you know, the kind of power to pull him in. Do you think it's possible that if, you know, he starts doing his Twitter stuff and you know, going after Fannie Willis and going after the judges and going after, do you think it's possible that they don't give him bail and bring him in?
Well, I think that they will give him bail initially. For certainly, I think he's due bail on these charges. But I think the court is likely to give him some admonishments, just like the federal judge did in D.C. They will give them a fair amount of leeway, that regardless, people say what they want to, but he's going to get a fair amount of leeway. It really depends on whether and how much he wants to push this court and push the federal court. And remember, some of the witnesses in Georgia are the same witnesses that you'll see in the January 6th, you know, the Jack Smith indictment as well. So, you know, I think that Donald Trump needs to be very, very careful. I think you can attack the indictment. He could charge it being politically. He could say that it was fraud. He could do all these things without personally attacking. That's where you cross the line. When you start personally attacking the prosecutors, you start personally attacking the judges or any one of the witnesses, especially the witnesses, that's where I think these judges are going to draw the line.
Now, last question I've got for you on this. Because I've had a bunch of people say, well, it wasn't such a big deal. Now, you know, is there any way that, you know, we can just, you know, he admits, you know, that he did some wrong things. Everybody just goes home and says, you know, let sleeping dogs lie. Is there any world in which he walks away from this without standing trial, without, you know, potentially being convicted and potentially going to any world that happens?
Well, you know, look, there will be a lot of interesting legal motions that will be filed, motions to dismiss in all of these cases. And he's got very good lawyers, very, very smart lawyers, but so does the Department of Justice, and so does the DA's office. And so the first instance will be that it will just be simply legal arguments back and forth, and it will be up to the judges. Those are very, very difficult for a defendant to win before a trial. You've got, if they do go to trial, whether or not there would be sufficient evidence for a jury to convict. That's another legal matter. So is there a world that he walks away? Of course, there's a world that's there. But I will tell you that history and odds are not in his favor of at least standing trial at some point, should he not accept some responsibility and try to cut a deal, which I do not see that world happening at all.
No, I don't see him cutting a deal. I don't see him pleading. I see him playing the victim card all the way to the very end, wherever that takes us. And we'll see. I got to change topics real quick because today's the 1-year anniversary of the Inflation Reduction Act. This, in my view, a huge piece of legislation helping us do a little bit on the climate front. Any thoughts? I mean, the president gave a good speech today. Any thoughts on the anniversary and what we're doing with it?
Look, I think that this is part of a package that the president of the United States is put forth, and the accomplishment that he's done. I think if you put all these pieces together, it's really a remarkable thing that he's been able to accomplish. He has governed in a way that I don't think I've seen really in my lifetime. I mean, you've seen such incredible job performance, the economy getting, inflation coming down, maybe ticking back up just a little bit right now. But the fact of the matter is, some of it's completely out of his control, like what Saudi Arabia is doing with oil prices and oil production. So I think, Rick, the thing that people have to remember, and those of us that have been in this political business for a long time will know this, you know, it takes a good 6 months or more for the public to start feeling better about the good news that they are actually seeing for 6 months. But they just don't seem to feel it, in part because the media keeps talking, well, you've got this and you've got that. There is always a lag, and the president has had a process. He has worked it, and I think it is going well for him, and his numbers are starting to tick up, and I think you're going to continue to see that.
So if in 6 months you're talking the heart of reelection time, so you're thinking that, you know, could be a good swing for him.
There is no panic in the Biden campaign or folks like me that are Biden supporters that his numbers have not ticked up dramatically yet. Because we have seen the experience that it takes a little bit to catch up. And I think as more people are focusing on Donald Trump's grievances and Joe Biden focuses on his accomplishments, you're going to see those numbers tick up considerably.
So not concerned about the Joe Manchin and the third way, no labels, all of this? Because I just saw no labels is on ballots in 10 states now. You got the picture of RFK in the background, and his kook kid is out there running around.
I think RFK is just a stalking horse for Steve Bannon and the MAGA right. If you look at who's giving him money and those kind of things, it is people that want to hurt Joe Biden. The no labels thing is another issue that I just can't quite understand what they're doing, because they clearly will take votes away from Joe Biden. I think that's a threat. It's one that he can overcome, but clearly that has the chance of putting Donald Trump back in the White House. There's no doubt. There is no way, Rick, that a third party can win in this country right now. There's no way. And there's no way in the foreseeable future that anybody can get 270 electoral votes unless you're one of the two major parties, which means you could only potentially be a spoiler. And the fact that no labels is not disclosing their donors, they're not telling us who is funding the efforts to get on the ballots in those 10 states. It's going to be the same mega billionaires that are going to select the nominee. They keep talking about choice and giving people choice. Well, they're not giving they're going to tell people who their choice is going to be for no labels. It's going to be selected in a smoke-filled room in some mansion in Georgetown, okay, by folks that you don't even know who it is. So we can't decide what their true motive might be. That's the fallacy of the no labels crusade.
You're listening to The Shaw. WAUK 540 AM Jackson. W266 DR Waukesha. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.